Welcome, and thank you for standing by. At this time, all participants are on a listen-only mode until the question-and-answer session of today's call. At that time, we also have a question-and-answer session. At a time to ask a question, press star one. This call is being recorded. If you have any objections, you may disconnect at this time, and I would now like to turn the call over today to our host, Larry Curley. Sir, you may begin.
Yes. From my side of the country, it's good afternoon. I hope everyone is well this day, and hopefully that you're all taking care of yourselves. We're having a number of comments, a number of questions, and discussions and items that we need to discuss today. But again, I just want to say thank you all for all the work that you all are doing out there. You all are doing a great job, and I'm very, very pleased to have you all here. So without further ado, we also have a special guest on today is Commissioner Hovland with the Administration for Native Americans, and she has some few items that she needs to share with you, information that would be helpful to you as well. So without any further delay, Commissioner Hovland, it's all yours.
All right, thank you. Good afternoon, my relatives. I greet you with a good heart. My name is Jeannie Hovland. I am a proud member of the Flandreau Santee Sioux Tribe, and I am Commissioner of the Administration for Native Americans. I am very happy to join you this afternoon. Thank you for this opportunity to share some brief updates with you as in regards to ANA and the Department of Health and Human Services. But I really want this opportunity to hear from you and know how we can try to support you from Washington, D.C. I continue to keep our tribal leaders and tribal community members in my thoughts and prayers as we're in a very unique time in history. And so, again, I'm just appreciative of this opportunity to be on today's call. Currently, I am serving on the White House Indian Country COVID-19 Task Force, and every Thursday, there is a nationwide tribal leaders call with the White House Department of Health and Human Services leadership, which includes Admiral Yaki from Indian Health Service. And not sure if you've heard the news, but the Senate did confirm him as the new director of Indian Health Service, Admiral Yaki, who's been serving in that position as acting director for close to 3 years now. And he is a member of the Zuni Navajo Nation, or the Zuni Nation. Anyhow, he's really shown great leadership, especially during this COVID-19 pandemic. But in addition to HHS, FEMA, HUD, the Department of Interior, USDA, and Veterans Affairs have also been participating on this multi-agency task force specific to Indian Country and the COVID-19 pandemic. So I would like to talk a little bit or hear from you today a little bit on how you are doing in your communities. The resources are reaching you in your homes, if there's areas that we need to be focusing on that we haven't yet, and things that we are doing correctly that are working well that we can continue to do and share with other federal agencies as we continue to address the COVID pandemic. To date, there has been more than $1 billion awarded by HHS agencies, including Indian Health Service, for tribal and urban Indian health facility operations. Another $200 million is being managed by Indian Health Service headquarters to support these efforts. This also includes $10 million to support sanitation and potable water needs, and $5 million to provide additional test kits and materials to IHS, tribal and urban Indian health programs, and these test kits have been free of charge. So there's been some resources that have been allocated, and we're hoping that is reaching the community level, the local level. So I would like to take the opportunity, after I speak about a few other topics, to hear from you on these resources specific to COVID-19. I am working with our tribal leaders throughout the IHS regions to develop a public service announcement to go on tribal radios and looking at other avenues to get a message out about being responsible and safe during the COVID pandemic, but also a message of hope to draw upon our culture, our native resiliency, and just bring hope into our communities and encouragement. A lot of us are feeling we've had the panic, the fear, the uncertainty, and then also just being socially withdrawn has been difficult. And so we want to offer some words of encouragement and would love to hear from you on how we can do that more effectively and what you would like to hear from us in regards to the COVID-19. I do have some additional funding resources, not regarding COVID-19 specifically, but at the Administration for Native Americans, we provide discretionary grant funding for Native American communities and Native nonprofit organizations, and all of our funding is open and available for applications right now, and they can be found on grants.gov. The Social and Economic Development Strategies funding is the funding I wanted to focus on. This is our most flexible of funding out of our program areas. This funding is typically up to 3 years, up to $350,000 per year. And I have added bonus points this year for projects that include tribal elders in the projects. I want to make sure that our elders are always represented in what I do as far as advocacy, but also encourage tribes to remember how important our elders are to us in intergenerational activity. So because of the COVID situation, our funding has been extended for applications through July 15th. Again, you can find more information about that on grants.gov, and you can always go to the Administration for Native Americans on our website to get information on our funding also. And then the last topic area I wanted to talk about is Operation Lady Justice Task Force, which was created by an executive order by President Trump back in November. And this is a task force of federal agencies to address the issues of murdered and missing Native Americans. Often we hear murdered and missing women and women and girls, I'm thankful that under murdered and missing Native Americans, it's for men, women, boys, and girls, with a focus on women and girls and children, of course. But I am the task force member to represent the Department of Health and Human Services, and it is a very aggressive agenda to really provide a report after 1 year to the president and a final report after 2 years. But one of the areas that HHS has been assigned to do is to get community education and information into the communities, into our Native communities, but also remembering our relatives that are in our urban settings. So really looking at how we take this issue upstream and how do we prevent our relatives from going missing or being murdered. How do we protect our high-risk and vulnerable populations, which at sometimes can be our elders? Because when we look at why our people are going missing and murdered, why are our people being targeted? And who are those vulnerable populations that are at high risk of becoming missing or becoming murdered? So we've looked at populations such as runaway and homeless youth, poverty, those that have substance misuse issues, mental health issues, and also our elders who often are caring for families who have a family member that has gone missing and then having to care for the grandchildren and great-grandchildren. Substance misuse has been a big issue in our communities. And so I want to make sure that as I serve on this Health and Human Services, or on this task force for the Department of Health and Human Services, that I'm advocating for the needs of our elders and having a better understanding. So I would like to visit and hear from you today. You have a fantastic advocate, Cynthia LeCount, who is always on the calls that we have across HHS, and she's always making sure that we remember to include our elders as we discuss all of these issues. So I just appreciate this opportunity, and I sincerely want to hear from you and see how I can support you in your communities and represent you on these task force and in these special initiatives like COVID. So at this time, I'd like to take the opportunity to open it up for questions. Operator, can you instruct how somebody can ask a question?
Yes, we will now begin the question and answer session of today's call. Please press star 1, make sure you unmute your phone and record your name, and your question will be presented. One moment while we collect questions.
Jeannie?
Yes.
This is Cynthia while we're collecting questions. I found out something this week that's really exciting, and Jasmine and I will be pursuing it and reporting out to you, unless you want to be on the conversation. We learned that Montana AARP has an initiative around murdered and missing Indigenous women. And that, as you can imagine, that's really unique with AARP, which serves a much older population. But we were told at the national office that because of the prevalence in Montana, we have so many girls, young girls and men missing, that AARP has taken that on too. So we're going to call the state office in Montana next week and see what they're doing. If you would like to join us, I'll send the information to you.
You are a wealth of resources. Thank you so much, and I would be happy to. I would like to. So, yes, please do extend an invitation. Thank you.
All right. Let's find out what they're doing. All right. Go ahead, operator.
Okay. Our first question comes from Terry Parton. Your line is now open.
Good afternoon, everyone. Hi, this is Terry Parton, president for the Wichita Affiliated Tribes in Oklahoma. I have a question about the A&A grant for the SEDS, and you said we would get points for elders. So is it elder specific just for that, or if you were doing something in the food or agriculture and incorporated elders, does that count? Is that the same?
Thank you. That's a very good question. As long as it includes elders, it doesn't have to be only elders. And it doesn't have to be an elders program, but the examples that you gave are correct.
Okay.
Can be traditional foods and with elders included in it. Yes.
Okay. That's all I wanted to ask. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Our next question comes from Melanie Blackwell. Your line is now open.
Yes, good afternoon, Jeanette. I'm calling from Pine Ridge, South Dakota, and I had questions about the drug elimination program. I know it was underneath the Department of HUD, then it went through the Department of Justice. I'm inquiring about that because our elders are more scared than ever. We just recently had a murder on our reservation, and it had to with drug dealers, meth dealers, a gang fight, and they killed an elder who tried to stop this kind of activity from happening during the lockdown because we didn't have enough officers, we didn't have enough security, we didn't have anything like that in that housing cluster, and we had a murder that resulted from that, and I think initiating that drug elimination program and bringing it back to assist in some of these housing clusters would really help right now because we are lacking in officers and security. I was just wondering if you guys can bring that back so it can assist in our more rural areas, in our towns, in our cities, and on our reservations. Thank you. Bye.
Thank you, Melanie, and I'm very sorry to hear about that. My heart goes out to you and the community. I will definitely bring it up on our task force meeting, and we do meet virtually every week. And I just want to make sure, is the request to bring this back to HUD or to bring this, whether it's through HUD or under Department of Justice, back to the tribal communities to be able to access?
Yes, maybe to the Department of Justice, but having it available for communities where a lot of our elders are at, because right now it's getting scary. You know, they're locked down and our officers are running crazy. They're really busy and, you know, it's just a scary situation and we do need it throughout Indian country. I'm just trying to see if you guys can reappropriate money to address that and bring it back underneath the Department of Justice so it's available to tribes and communities for elder protection. Thank you.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you. Our next question comes from Rebecca Matus. Your line is now open.
Thank you. In our tribe, we have been trying to improve our elder codes, and I know that we did get some assistance from North Dakota University, and also we did get some funding to do training. However, like any other tribe, sometimes we do have turnaround of staff. Our attorneys that were working with us, they have left. So we're basically back to step one, where we need those technical assistants to improve or update our codes, and we also need specialized training for our APS cases. So that's what I wanted to bring up. Thank you.
Okay, thank you, Rebecca. So a couple of things. Our current funding, the Social and Economic Development Strategies, could be used to address that issue. We have a Social and Economic Development Strategies Growing Organizations, or SEDSGO, which will be issued hopefully in the next 4 weeks. This is going to be brand new funding that I created to help address this very issue, to help build capacity for tribes and tribal organizations to build internal controls, to really have the infrastructure to be able to apply for federal funding and keep the funding and helping projects to be successful. So keep that in mind. It doesn't help immediately, but it would be a way to help grow capacity.
Jeannie, this is Cynthia again. I'm going to jump in. Rebecca, where are you from?
Pascoyaki Tribe, Tucson, Arizona.
Okay, thank you. Thank you. I asked that because the University of North Dakota is still available for technical assistance with tribal codes for elder abuse, so I will pass on your information. And then I think Lorraine Atcity and her crew down at, or I don't think I know, Lorraine Atcity and her crew at Intertribal Council of Arizona also have a great program, so I'll talk with her as well. Thank you.
And this is Jackie with NIGI, and I'm on the line.
Thank you. Get on it.
I'm showing no questions, but as a reminder, if you do have a question, please press star 1 and record your name.
Jeannie, this is Larry Curl. I'm going to be jumping in as well. I have a question. On the A&A grants that are coming out that you're just referring to, are those grants that are for direct services to the elderly population?
So the grants that are out right now, they have to be eligible entities are state and federally recognized tribes, Native nonprofits, and of course our Pacific Basin area, and Native Hawaiians. Native urban organizations is the other population. Does that answer your question? So they'd have to compete through one of those eligible entities.
Yeah, I guess what I was thinking is that some of these grants that come out says it has to be like a direct services, like buying food and providing the food directly to the people in various communities. And so that's I'm referring to as a direct services.
So no, not necessarily. It can be used to build infrastructure, to develop court codes, to it's a project. It's not to fund a program or to supplement a program. It's seeds funding, but for a project. So you'd have to show what is the social or economic development outcome of having this funding and these direct services. And I can't go into too much specifics right now, unfortunately, because the funding is open right now. But maybe once it closes, I'd be happy to come back again and we could talk a little bit more strategy on that.
Would appreciate that. Thank you.
Absolutely. Thank you.
Okay, and our next question comes from Beatrice Norton. Your line is now open.
All right. I really don't have a question, but I think that, you know, I echo the people that spoke before I did. I'm from Hopi, and we have been struggling with our elder abuse ordinance for over probably going almost on 10 years. It's been completed, but funding is always the issue, and because of our declining dollars, the executive director would not move it on to tribal council, so it's just sitting in the executive director's office. And we have such a great need, you know, for that ordinance. But I think one of the things that we also recognize is that, you know, what's going to make it successful is going to be the enforcement. And that's what I think a lot of our tribes lack of, you know, enforcement of a lot of the ordinances that we have. So, you know, that's another area of concern. But I know that in the, as I was working on it, I picked it up from another manager that was working on it before I was. And when I did the research, I keep going back to that as far as the BIA. It's a mandate that BIA provides child protective and adult and vulnerable adult protective services. And I've tried going to BIA and asking them, you know, why are you not providing that? It's a mandate. And they would throw it back at me and say, well, the tribe needs to, you know, be the one to set their priority, and it looks like, you know, the child protective services is the priority. And so I think that, you know, it, at a higher level, along with our tribes, and like with the, I'm from Arizona, so I know that with the Indian the Arizona Indian Council on Aging, maybe with their help, we can begin to I guess force BIA, you know, to put more funding into that. And I'm not sure what funding tribes are using to fund their APS programs. But, you know, we also recognize that it's something that will have to go under social services, because us within our own programs don't have that capacity, you know, to do APS. And so it really, to me, I think really it requires a new program to be set up within all the Indian tribes. And so we struggle with that. And then we also struggle with, you know, and that's kind of what we've been through and within our tribe was, you know, once when we were drafting it, it went in it for review of these different people that, like the prosecutor, the general counsel. And then once they get done with their review, then they're gone, and then somebody else, you know, new comes in. So I think the ordinance that we worked on has been reviewed at least 5 times by 5 different general counsels, prosecutors, judges. And that's where, you know, that holdup was as well, too. So I really think that, you know, at the national level, this really has to become, you know, a priority. And we're seeing so much, you know, happening in our community right now with this COVID-19. You know, all of our villages are closed off. You know, some have guards at their entrances and things like that. But what we're noticing is that it's these individuals that are either, you know, on substance abuse, meth, they're the ones that are not adhering to the guidelines, and they're, you know, they're going from home to home. We have people that are intruding into other people's home at night. a lot of break-ins, you know, into homes around here, and that just adds on, you know, to that uneasiness that everybody is feeling at this moment with this COVID-19. So I think out of this, we really, you know, need to prioritize the elder code or elder codes throughout Indian country. So that's what I wanted to express. Thank you.
Thank you, Beatrice. Great conversation.
Yes, and thank you. And even while I'm with the Department of Health and Human Services, this is something that I can share with Assistant Secretary Sweeney at Interior as well as our federal partner at Department of Justice. So thank you for that feedback.
Thanks, Jeannie.
And our next question comes from Al Ward. Your line is now open.
Hi,
Al Ward, you must have heard us talking about you.
I heard you talking about AARP
Montana. AARP guy from Montana that we're going to call next week, Jeannie.
Yeah, I basically just wanted to put a couple of things in. One is that we're now working with 7 reservations in Montana, and we're doing a lot of different kinds of things. The MMIW stuff was really intriguing to us, but we also got it to Nancy LeMond, who is the Senior Vice President for AARP in National Office, and she got really interested in it. Pretty much what we've been doing has been helping get the word out. I'm on the Governor's Advisory Council on Aging and was tasked this time because I opened my mouth because I said, you know, we have this governor's conference every year and we've never had a track for Indian country. And so we ended up with a keynote speaker and 5 breakouts on Indian country, and one of them was on MMIW. And I have to tell you, there was not a chair in the room. Everybody was really interested in hearing about it. So what I do mostly is fraud-related stuff, so it kind of also flips over to what the people were talking about as far as elder abuse. And one of the things that I've noticed about elder abuse is that the tribal codes are so different, not only in the age of the people, but also in, you know, what it means. And I'm on a new council here in Montana called the Eastern Montana Elder Justice Council, and it's made up of a lot of people who have been working on elder abuse for many years. And I have been really interested in trying to get more Indian connection with that, because I know elder abuse and especially financial exploitation is a big problem on the reservations. And so I've been working a little bit with Rocky Mountain Tribal Leaders Council. I'm the chair of the Prevention Education Subcommittee of the Eastern Montana Elder Justice Council, and one of the people that's on it is a person who works for the Rocky Mountain Tribal Leaders Council. So we're hoping to move in that direction, and our goal for the Eastern Montana Elder Justice Council is to be a resource for people who are trying to get programs going or trying to work cases, trying to figure out, you know, how to deal with elder abuse problems.
Thank you, Al,
for the work you're doing and for remembering to have our tribes at the table of these conversations. I really appreciate that, and I look forward to visiting with you more next week on the call.
Okey-do.
Okay, and as a reminder, if you do have a question right now, please press star 1 and record your name. Star 1 and record your name.
So, Operator, this is Jasmine Eklund. I was wondering if we could go, well, people are thinking about their fantastic questions for Jeannie, and I wanted to thank Jeannie for giving that wonderful presentation. I was wondering if we could go to giving ACL announcements, and that way if folks have questions, they can just let us know who their question is for. But we just kind of wanted to make sure with half the call remaining that we let you know what else ACL is working on and give you some food for thought so that we can kind of take questions also from the Title VI perspective, if that's okay.
Absolutely. Just let me know.
Okay. Commissioner Hovland, is that okay? Hovland, is that okay?
Absolutely. Thank you.
Okay, perfect. So, hello, everyone. This is Jasmine Eklund, and we're going to pivot a little bit because I wanted to give some announcements from the ACL Title VI perspective. The first of which is that I wanted to let you know that you guys should have received your CARES funding this week. So that was Supplement 3, and all Title VI participants got funding through the CARES Act. Your CARES funding should be used for COVID response activities. And we also wanted to flag, because this question came up a bit on Wednesday's webinar, does that include like startup activities once our communities are able to engage in startup activities? Yes. So you can use it for response activities and getting back to normal activities whenever your community deems that to be the case. So we also wanted to let you know that you have until September 2021 to use that CARES Act funding, and that we will be providing more reporting information about CARES and FSCR funding very soon. So just please hold on the reporting piece, but we just wanted to let you know that that is coming. We also wanted to let you know about just kind of plugging the HHS budget consultation, again, letting you know that those comments from tribal leadership about the HHS budget are due on May 1st, and that's to consultation@hhs.gov. So just letting you know that those are due on May 1st to consultation@hhs.gov if your tribal leadership would like to weigh in on that. The other thing, so today seems to be a day of funding opportunities, and it's so exciting. We wanted to let you know that ACL has a new funding opportunity. So it's an Alzheimer's grant opportunity, which tribes can apply to. For that particular grant, there's actually a recorded information session that we've been encouraged to have people interested in that grant apply to. I'm going to read off a phone number, and so you guys can jot it down, but you guys can also let us know if you would like it repeated or sent to you particularly. Again, that's for a new Alzheimer's grant opportunity, and it's a informational webinar that you can listen to. And if you dial 800-627-3229, and the passcode for that is 5986. So again, that's 800-627-3229, passcode 5986. So that's another opportunity. So the other thing is we also know that tribes are thinking about reopening, and we're working on guidance, but please stay tuned for that. And we're just, again, I say that with the caveat that we understand that these are your communities and you know what you need best. So if there's information that you have particularly would like to share as being helpful or information you would like to see ACL distribute on a national basis, please let us know because you are the experts. The next announcement I have is that we are working on a webinar which is tentatively set for Wednesday, May 6th. And this webinar will surround Medicaid during the COVID-19. So please be on the lookout for that. Again, that's May 6th, and we're going to have the fabulous Elena Seep talking to you about all of the possible changes to Medicaid and everything you need to know about Medicaid in this COVID time. So again, May 6th. Two more announcements. Thank you for bearing with me. We wanted to let you know, because it seems to be grant announcement time, that we heard today that HRSA has recently announced a grant opportunity that tribes can apply to. I'll just give you the grant number. It's HRSA 2135, and I guess our understanding is that's general COVID response funding, so I think that's also on grants.gov, and so we just wanted to let you know that that's available. And finally, I just wanted to say, you know, on these calls, I just wanted to say it's really special for us when we can hear from tribal leadership.
So if you're a tribal leader sitting on the call thinking, you know, I really want to give an update on my community, it doesn't even necessarily have to be a question, but if you want to press star one and just let us know what's going on in your community, it is so special for us to hear from tribal leadership because that helps us understand what's going on in your communities. And with that, I will stop talking and see if anyone has any questions or Larry, if you have anything to add.
No, but I think that one of the things I'd just like to add is that for those of you out there, take a really close look at that HRSA funding. And I think that I've had dealings with HRSA in the past, and they're really very responsive to tribes and would be very helpful to have each of you go out there and find out what that grant is all about and hopefully put together a proposal that can meet the needs of your respective tribes. That's all I have to say.
Awesome. And again, I think Commissioner Hovland is still with us. So if you have any questions for her or any questions for your ACL team, just let us know who you'd like those directed to. Thank you.
Operator, are there any tribal leaders that are coming on board?
Yes, sir. Our next question comes from Peter Mugesha III. Your line is now open.
Bonjour. It's Pete Mugesha. I'm the new elderly director for the Skagen Chippewa and Mole Lake, and shout out to Cynthia LeCount. I haven't heard from you in a long time. But my question is...
I was excited to have you join us. Pete is our third generation director for Mole Lake, Skagen Chippewa. I worked with his grandpa as a foster grandparent. I worked with his father as a Title VI director, and now we have young Pete. So welcome.
Thank you. And I actually talked to my father this morning and asked him to help me with the elder program, and he said he definitely will. So he'll be a little involved also. But my question is, I'm not familiar with all the, as I'm a new director as of today, with all the acronyms and things that are going on, is there a transcript to this that can be available? I'm trying to write copious notes, and it's just not working.
Oh, yeah, this is Jasmine. We can definitely send you a transcript after the call, and I think we're also being recorded, so we can let you know what happens today.
And Pete, I'm sure that your regional person, Amy, is probably on the line and
yes.
Will be contact. Are you there, Amy?
Yeah, can you hear me?
Yes.
I can.
Yeah, this is Amy. Congratulations and welcome, or welcome back, Pete. I saw the information about you joining the program, and I'm looking forward to reaching out. Hopefully, I'm happy to meet with you one-on-one to kind of just review stuff with you. So I certainly will follow up via email with you on that, or let me know if you prefer otherwise.
No, that's great. Thank you. I appreciate it. And with that, that's what I have, so I'll keep listening.
Thanks, Amy. Tell everyone at Mole Lake, hello, Pete.
I will, Cynthia. Miigwech.
Miigwech.
Cynthia, this is Larry. I was wondering, is Edwin on?
Edwin Walker is on.
Oh, cool.
Yes, I'm here.
Hi, Edwin.
Can you hear me?
Yes, we can. Do you have any thoughts from your end, Edwin?
No, I don't have any real updates. The update was that we were able to get that money out. We're hoping that it will be viewed as very helpful to serving the elders in each of your tribal areas. Thanks, Larry.
You're very welcome. By the way, Edwin Walker is the director. Give me your correct title. I'm sorry.
I'm the Deputy Assistant Secretary for Aging, but I work for you.
Thank you.
He never tells me that.
And our next question comes from Karen Torx. Your line is now open.
Yes, good afternoon. It's Karen Torrance. I'm calling from Shinnecock Nation. I am not a leader, but I am the director of our senior program. And I just quickly had a question regarding there was a grant information with numbers 21 something 35 is all I got. So just like the previous gentleman, instead of trying to just, if you have it available to give me that number, that would be great. But I guess the best thing really would be just to have a copy of a transcript of this call.
Hi, Karen. This is Jasmine, and I can give you the number again and also
thank you.
With the transcript. Oh, cool. So that number is HRSA, H-R-S-A.
I'm sorry. It's H-R. The reception is kind of muggy a little bit. I can't.
No, it's fine. No, it's fine. It's H-R, so H is in Henry, R is in Robert, uh-huh. S is in Sam, A is in Alice.
Okay. Okay.
20. And then 135.
Okay, got it. Thank you very kindly. And I also just want to say that I thank you all very much for providing these calls. They have been a wealth of information and guidance that just on a normal day, I appreciate it, but especially during this COVID pandemic that we are experiencing, it really kind of calms your nerves a little bit just to hear someone talk and kind of guide you along the way. So, I appreciate everybody's time and their information that they're making available throughout Indian country. So thank you again.
Thank you very much, Karen. And your words of support is very, very helpful. And it pleases us that it's valuable to you and hopefully to the rest of the tribal community out there as well. So thank you very much for that comment.
You're most welcome.
And operator, this is Jasmine. Do we have any further questions?
I was just wondering, Jasmine, this is Larry. When we start talking about some of the tribes that are in the process or thinking about reopening, I was wondering from the tribal perspective, how many of the tribes out there are thinking about reopening in conjunction with what their respective state governors are saying and whether they will be abiding by those depending on what the situation looks like in their communities.
Larry, this is Jasmine. I think that's a fantastic question that we don't know the answer to, and I don't want to put anybody on the spot, but if folks wanted to chime in on things that they're thinking about or felt like they wanted to share, that would be fantastic. But again, I don't want to put anybody on the spot.
Well, my preference would be that this be a discussion item maybe for the next call.
Okay.
Jasmine, this is Colette Adamson from the National Resource Center on Native American Aging, and I just wanted to kind of put this out there that I know you've mentioned a lot of funding opportunities that are available through the grants that are available. So I just want to offer out to the Title VI directors and tribal leadership that are on the phone, if your tribe has participated in the needs assessment, please don't hesitate to reach out to us and see if we could provide any assistance with getting you some numbers that you may need to help support your grant applications. We are teleworking right now, working remotely, but please feel free to call myself or my staff. We have our cell phone number listed, and then we do check our voicemail in the office pretty regularly. So please don't hesitate to reach out to us because we'd like to help in any way we can. Or any other technical assistance needs that you have. So we're still available, and we're ready to help. So just feel free to call us.
Okay, forgive me for my technical issue, but we do have four questions standing by. Our next question comes from Erica Kolakowski. Your line is now open.
Hello, this is Erica Kolakowski. I'm the director of the Aging Division for the Menominee Indian Tribe in Wisconsin. And I just have a question. So I'm also part, I'm acting on the operations division of our incident command. And as we review our plan and response and what's going well and what's not, and obviously I know that everyone is having huge problems getting supplies. I was wondering if tribes have looked at, I'm newer in my position, so this I don't know. I was wondering if tribes have considered joining together in like a buying group to get higher tiered priority in purchasing and better prices on supplies and items that they may need.
Hi, and this is Jasmine, and that is a fantastic idea. I have not heard of that, but I think that that's a fantastic idea that we can kind of maybe noodle around for the future. Cynthia, what do you think about that? I hate to put you on the spot.
I think that's a really great idea, Erica. Thank you. As I know there's, I know it's hard to purchase PPE. I know tribes are looking for it. I also know that we're having difficulties accessing even the food containers for your home-delivered meals or your carry-out meals that you're doing now. So that's something I'm really interested in, and let's talk with, I don't know. I'll have Edwin point me in a direction, and we'll see what we can put together this week. Maybe that's a conversation also that we should involve Dr. Bruce Finkian from Inden Health. I do want to mention that Jasmine and I have Friday calls, Friday morning calls with IHS, and Bruce, Dr. Fink has encouraged you that if you, any of you have requested PPE from IHS or your tribal clinics, and you were turned down, to please ask again, because they are receiving PPE as time goes on, and maybe they will be able to free some up for you, so continue to ask. I have also, Erica, I heard a couple weeks ago in a manager's meeting that AAAs, Area Agencies on Aging within states, are calling in their orders to states for that very same reason, to increase buying power. So I've also encouraged our Title VI programs to reach out to your state aging office and let them know you're having difficulty in accessing whatever you're having difficulty accessing, and maybe they will help you out as well. But let us propose that to some other Indian feds here and see what we can put together.
Okay, thanks.
I love ideas coming in from you folks.
And our next question comes from Clifford Stanger. Your line is now open.
Todd Salah, good afternoon. So I had a question for you guys, if you guys heard anything about any innovative ways from programs, people going out of their norm to do things, perhaps maybe crazy stuff like maybe flying drones and dropping off meals. Not necessarily that, but so I'm just trying to gauge on anybody else who's going out of their normal duties to come up with different and innovative ways how they're dealing with their meal delivery or any other services that they're providing.
So this is Jasmine, and I just wanted to jump in with a really cool idea we heard on Wednesday, and I think Cynthia actually included it in her blast, but I think it bears repeating here. One tribe had told us that one way they were making sure that people were staying safe is that they had given everybody a green and a red ribbon and had asked elders, like, if you feel like you're good, like, just you can put up a green ribbon and we'll know you're good to go, and if you put up a red ribbon, we'll know you need help. So it was kind of a way to keep people kind of distancing unless it was necessary, but also make sure you were communicating with your elders.
So I thought the ribbon idea was really cool. We also heard on Wednesday about tribes talking about buying phones, and I think that was another action item Cynthia and I were going to talk about with AARP, was looking at how to purchase phones so that we can make sure people are not distanced and having ways to connect with one another. I think as far as innovation goes, we've also talked about restaurant vouchers as far as ways to get meals into people's hands. So that was another thing that we've kind of learned to do as far as responding to this pandemic. But I think I'm going to stop talking, and since we have such a captive audience of wonderful Title VI people, see if anybody else wants to chime in with any other innovations they've heard of.
This is Jeannie with the Administration for Native Americans. I just wanted to share, though, it wasn't specific to elderly meal program. We did have a grantee of ours that the elders are starting a virtual talking circles with the youth as a way to talk about resiliency and, again, the message of stay strong, we will overcome this, and we have overcome many things throughout our generations, and just sharing history and their wisdom, but also encouragement through these virtual talking circles.
Does that help give you some ideas?
Yes, that's great. So I had one last question. I think this is in regards to our first meeting. They never did send out that recipe for the low-calorie Frito pie.
I was with Jean Lloyd working on that this week.
This is Jean Lloyd. I have it on an old slide somewhere. I will send it to Cynthia.
Thank you. Thank you for reminding us, Clifford. It sounds wonderful.
All right. Well, you guys are doing a great job, and like somebody said, this is a wealth of information that you guys are giving out. I regret missing the Wednesday's webinar. But I got in contact with an ACL rep and got updated on that, so that was pretty helpful. So we're surviving here at the Umatilla Tribe, and our departments are working together to, join as a team. It's not just our program, but, you know, different departments are coming together and distributing to the community. Yohkalo. Thank you.
Thank you, Clifford.
And our next question comes from Larry Wiltie. Your line is now open.
Yes, hello, sir. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Hello, okay, good. I was calling because I wanted the Cynthia LeCun's recipe for that chewing gum she mentioned last week. I'm just kidding. I'm just teasing you guys. I was calling because our tribe paid for a company, a contractor to come in and to disinfect and fumigate all the buildings, including our AOA building. And I was wondering if we could use our funding to continue that maybe biweekly at least, if not once a week.
Yes.
Okay, good.
Absolutely. This is a time when we're all being reminded about cleanliness. So absolutely.
Okay. Another a couple ideas. I wanted to throw out there for everybody, is on the phones that we talked about last week about when I had mentioned asking if it was possible to purchase those phones, and because of the idea that I presented about the green and red ribbon on the doors, I was in reference to those two things, some of the ideas my staff and I were talking about this morning was giving out bingo cards to all of the elders and getting on the phone with each other and playing bingo with each other, you know. And another one was having like our tribal hymn singing on the phone. And then another idea we talked about was possibly purchasing a rototiller so that the elders can have a garden they would feel safe getting their vegetables from, as well as giving them a chance to get outdoors at their homes to get sunshine, you know. So those are some things we've been discussing. Those are things we've been trying to discuss to up their social activity, you know, physical activity. So I wanted to share that would, you know, help anybody out there. This is Darren with the Kiowa AOA program, and I appreciate this time and opportunity.
Thank you so much.
This is Jean. I wanted to say I think that's a great idea to help get a garden rototill to help people plant and to get out there in the sunshine and doing physical activities, and that will make them feel better both about themselves and about their environment. And I think that's a great idea. Thank you.
And a great energy.
And I'm wondering about Cynthia's chewing gum too.
Cynthia, this is Larry. I remember, I think, in our last conversation that you mentioned that there were some programs out there thinking about buying sewing machines so they can make masks.
Yes.
Just some of the innovative ideas that are happening out there.
Yep, that's a great idea to buy some sewing machines, loan them out to the seniors, buy some fabric, make masks for yourselves or for other programs. I've seen Navajo is crying for masks down there and putting out requests for them. We can also, having those sewing machines can also lead to some really good intergenerational activities use any of those items can be purchased with Title VI funds, supplemental funds. Those are activities, and we can do activities in the senior center at home. So great ideas. Thanks, Darren.
Thank you.
Thank you. Our next question comes from Diana. Your line is now open.
Thank you. This is Diana Zirl with Kenaisi Indian Tribe in Kenai, Alaska, and I serve on the Tribal Council. I truly appreciate all the thoughts that have gone forward here about our elders, because that's been one of our concerns, is how we reach out, not just from a food perspective, but from the social perspective, because the loneliness and the isolation can create other issues, as we know, such as anxiety or depression. So I really appreciate the flexibility of this funding to be innovative in how we can reach out to those elders. I think that's so critical. But one comment I wanted to make was earlier there was an question asked about how we're doing our preparedness for reopening and the reopening issues and how we're responding to the state or federal as they reopen. And we at the tribe this week made the decision when the governor for the state of Alaska decided to open up some businesses that we were still going to do what we felt was in the best interest of our tribal members and the other beneficiaries that we serve here. And so we are still in our contingency plan with our non-essential not here and some essential working from home. And those types of services, such as our medical and our elders and so forth, the Meals on Wheels that we're using, still going forward, but not allowing the pressure of reopening without ensuring that we have the right processes in place to protect their safety so that we don't have a second wave or how we're going to respond into the fall. So I just wanted to mention that because I think it's very important that we as tribes use that self-determination of what we think is best for us and not feel pressured from the outside. Thank you.
Thank you for saying that so well, Diana. Thank you. I appreciate that.
Our next question comes from Darlene. Your line is now open.
Good afternoon, everyone. Darlene Gardefee from Reno, Nevada. So our governor has not let us know how long we're going to be in not being able to leave our homes yet. We do have several cases of the COVID-19 in our area, and this has caused a concern along for our delivery staff during this COVID-19 pandemic. So we're trying to eliminate some of those fears, but it is difficult. And we are right in the middle of the city, so it's all around us. It's really something that we've no one's ever gone through, so we're having a hard time dealing with that. Another thing, too, I wanted to mention the red and green. We have a red and green squares that our community has put in all our houses. So when we do the delivery to the, of the lunches for the elders, we can go by and see all the houses. And if we notice a red square, then we can report it to the people who are checking on those. So it's been an interesting time. It's been scary, but we're trying to get through that. I just wanted to let everybody know that we are safe here so far, and I'm glad to have the encouragement from Title VI staff and others. Thank you.
Thank you, Darlene.
And our next question comes from Alicia Hurley. Your line is now open.
Hi, can everybody hear me?
Yes.
Yes.
Okay. I have a question about purchasing electronic devices, such as like a maybe a small tablet for our tribal elders so that they can receive the same type of electronic communication, and then also for our elder care program director to be able to do check-ins with them, maybe via like FaceTime or Zoom. I know that she's trying to make as many phone calls as she can, but it also might be a way where she can get several elders, you know, on a Zoom conference so that they could also kind of socialize and just check in with each other in a safe way.
Thank you, Alicia. That's very good. And, yes, those are allowable. And I'm glad you mentioned the telephone trees to have seniors call one another on a regular basis. That keeps them involved and feeling like they're doing something for us, too. Your question also reminded me, Larry Curley and I were talking the other day and remembering that in Navajo land and in Pine Ridge and in Lacouture, Wisconsin, and at Turtle Mountain, North Dakota, we listen to the radio stations still. Radios are really important in some tribal communities and a way of passing information on. So purchasing radios is also a good way to keep folks informed if you need to.
Thank you. I appreciate that.
Yep, thank you.
And our next and final question comes from Melanie Blackwall. Your line is now open.
Hello. I was asking about the phone numbers again, if you can go ahead and mention all the sites who have funding available for the audience so they can write down those numbers and log down those or write down those sites. Thank you.
Hi, this is Jasmine. Okay, just 1 second and I'll read those phone numbers out again. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Cool. So the first one was for the Alzheimer's Grant Opportunity. That phone number was 800-627-3229, and that had a passcode of 5986. You got it?
Yes.
Cool. And again, that was for listening for an informational session for our Alzheimer's grant. Again, the HRSA grant was HRSA20135. And those can be found on grants.gov. So, and I believe Commissioner Hovland also said that the ANA grant can be found on grants.gov. So we can go ahead. I'm sorry. So, and we can also send out this information in an email, but we, that's it. That is it verbally.
Okay. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Jasmine, hi. This is Laura Stevenson. I have Petra Harmon Onehawk on the line, and she would like to say something. Petra, you'll have to unmute yourself.
Okay. Hello, everyone. I'm Title VI Director for the Standing Rock Sioux Tribe, and I'm also the Planning Chief for our Incident Command System. And so we have implemented the CDC mitigation plan that was put out, and there were three phases: phase one, phase two, and phase three. The tribe immediately jumped to phase three, so we're still playing catch up trying to implement our system. And our priority was our communication plan. We have eight communities, and our reservation straddles the North and South Dakota border and have a lot of distances between our communities. And so really strengthening our communication with the local districts, and then we formed the strike teams, the delivery teams for each of the districts so that they can deliver things. We've had issues, though, in regards to, and I heard it on the call, about ordering food. In our region, there's been a limit on the amount of things that we can order, and I used to order through my local grocer. I would order bulk, and we haven't been able to order bulk. I just checked with him again yesterday, and he said he still has a cap on what he can order, and he only orders things, or he can only order because he needs to keep his shelf stocked. And then the other thing was that our main vendor, Cisco, has required that we have our account all paid in full, and it's been a struggle to work with our finance who didn't have any electronic systems in place. And so last week was really pushing them to really implement our electronic purchase order system in place, and then Monday was getting the chairman to sign his documents electronically. And so just really getting people to realize the seriousness of this pandemic and educating them on fomites and the necessary training. And one of the things that I have shared with the state, because we get funding with the state, is that they had immediately notified us that they're working from home, and that we're considered essential staff, but we have not been able to order any PPE. And this past week was the first message that I got from one of the vendors that we are able to finally order a certain quantity of masks. So that's been our priority for our ISCS team, is to get that PPE in and start delivering to our elders, and then helping the commodity program, so helping the elders get their commodity. That's all I can think of for now.
Thank you, Petra. Thank you for the update. That's really helpful. I will say, again, I don't know if you were on the call when Cynthia mentioned, like, working with your local IHS about the mask and the PPE thing. We had heard from national IHS staff that it was a good idea to kind of let your local office know, hey, we need PPE for our elder programs. And so if they have a supply chain, and if they said no, like, a month ago, it's probably a good idea to check with them again because they just got an influx. Another thing we talked about earlier, I don't know if you were on the call, and it doesn't really solve the, like, food purchase quantity problem, but we did talk about the potential for restaurant vouchers for elders to provide them with meals through restaurants, if that's just another avenue. Again, I know that doesn't sound to solve the food quantity issue, but I just wanted to let you know that was a solution that somebody had come up with earlier.
So a question I have then is, are the pre-made frozen meals allowable?
Right, so that's, yes, and Jean Lloyd, please correct me if anything is wrong, but yes, that's allowable. We encourage you to follow the nutritional requirements as best as possible.
But we also understand that we're in a unique situation, and so we will be allowing those, like, shelf-stable freezer meals. But, again, we just encourage you to try to find the more nutritious ones if possible.
This is Jean. I'd like to add, of course, any kind of meal that you can get them is really good. You know, preference is pre-made, or preference is your own hot food. If you can't do that, and that's really reasonable, then some people are doing their own frozen meals because they still have people who are cooking in their kitchens. Other people are doing pre-made frozen meals. Sometimes they're adding fruit, milk, and bread because those are components that might not be there. Then people might be doing shelf-stable meals. Those are usually a lot higher in sodium, so that's a less of a preference. And then some people are then going to grocery bag items. And in that whole list of things going from the first choice down to the last choice, there's also restaurant vouchers where you can work out a program if the elder can get out and get a meal from a restaurant or is in an area where a restaurant would deliver. And that's going to be very difficult in Indian country. In the presentation that I did on Wednesday, there was a URL for the Nutrition Resource Center that gives some tips on how to negotiate a contract with a restaurant, making sure how you pay the restaurant, not the elder, how to identify the elder, how to work out an appropriate menu with the restaurant, how do they redeem it, for how long, so that you have a good, solid contract, but as simple as possible. And again, trying to get healthy meals at the restaurant as opposed to a burger and chips. Thanks.
Right. This is Petra again. So I was going to look into the pricing. I mean, it's something that we were working on anyway in regards to making the frozen meals, but looking at how much that Oliver system costs and mm-hmm. if it would be feasible for us and if that's an allowable.
Again, what do you need to make meals? Oliver is a good system to use. You could use the Oliver system to do your own home-delivered meals at any time, not just necessarily frozen meals. So people do use the Oliver system all the time.
I don't want our strike teams to have to deliver every day on a daily basis.
Of course not.
Because we're talking about 2.3 million acres.
Right. And people are routinely providing meals about, depending on how heavy it is and what the territory is, either once a week or once every 2 weeks. So, yes, you could put them together and, you know, deliver frozen meals. Again, you then have to make the meals and freeze them or buy them frozen. And then you have to have an appropriate carrier to keep them frozen as you're taking them out. And getting an appropriate carrier is also an allowable cost. Does that answer the questions?
Yes. Thank you.
All right, this is Jasmine, and I think at this point in the call, we should probably kick it over to Larry Curley for closing remarks. If you did not get your question answered, I'm going to implore you to please send your questions to myself, Cynthia, our TEA team, whomever, and just note that we'll be calling those questions together on that comprehensive Title VI FAQ document that's on older Indians as well as ACL.gov. And we'll be updating that with your questions. So if you did not get your question answered today, please reach out to us, and we'll respond in writing, and then we'll also put that in the document for the benefit of everyone else. So without further ado, I'm going to turn it over to Larry Curley for closing remarks.
Thank you, Jasmine, and thank you all of you out there who have been so responsive and having questions, and hopefully, as I indicated earlier, that we have been of help to you. during these trying times. I think one of the things that it reminds me of how we're doing all of this, there was a movie that came out years ago called Starman. I don't know if any of you saw that. But I remember one of the quotes that came out of that movie, and the guy that was the alien in the movie said to the people, human beings that he was working with, he said, "The one thing that really surprises me about you, I like about you," he says, "you are at your best when things are at its worst." And I think that this particular time in our lives has brought out some of the best in all of you in Indian country and those of you who work with our elderly population. And I thank you from the bottom of my heart for the hard work that you do. And I appreciate the effort that you're putting into that work. And I think that one of the things I just wanted to mention, because I get questions from time to time as the executive director of the National Indian Council on Aging, is we have a national conference on elders coming up in August of this year in Reno, Nevada. Currently, those plans are still as scheduled. It's August 17th through the 21st. We're awaiting a decision by our board whether we will be postponing it or be rescheduling it to a later time. But at this particular time, it's still scheduled. And the other thing I wanted to mention as well is on the national, on the NICOA website, which is NICOA.org, there is also a website, a site there regarding information on the COVID-19 matter. And so I just want to say, have a safe weekend. Take care of yourselves and your families. And let's see what we can do. And I know there's a better day coming, and it will be coming soon. And I'm happy to hear as well that our airs are cleaner, the atmosphere is cleaner, and that the Earth, Mother Earth, appears to be healing. And that's good news. In the meantime, thank you all very much, Jasmine, Jeannie. Thank you all for being involved, and we'll catch you next Friday. Jasmine?
Thanks, Larry. I don't have anything else. Just have a good weekend, everybody, and be well.
Bye. That concludes today's conference.
Bye.
Thank you for participating. You may disconnect at this time. Speakers.